Can I talk about this decision that you made recently?
Yes, Sophie, yes.
Okay. You know, you made it a decision to not do the, you're
heart surgery.
Heart surgery.
No.
Anything like that. And I was in the ICU with you yesterday. And I was speaking with the person at the hospice who said, okay, we'll transfer you over here. And this is where we're sitting right now, in a beautiful room.
Beautiful room. Sun is pouring in.
The sun's coming in through a skylight, but we have shade. It's
and
cool.
The air is...
It's nice. There's these nice pictures.
And somebody waiting there if I need them.
Yes, and somebody waiting there to take care of you.
Yes.
So
yes.
You're never alone here as well. Which is... some people, the people at the hospice told me that, that usually it takes somebody a lot of back and forth and a lot of this and that, but you seemed to have sureness about your decision and what you wanted to do. Do you think that this has to do with, your attitudes through life, or is it, can you tell me about that?
I don't know. Quite frankly... When I had been in a day of dialysis, which is not the most comfortable thing, but the people are nice there, and I made the most of it. I decided that if I were going to do dialysis, that I would not cry and moan and complain, that I would make the most of it. So I took knitting, and I took a book, and I read the latest books. I love to read. I took knitting for my granddaughter to make her a little hat, and I want my children to have stuff that I did for them, made for them. But that day, the last day that I went to dialysis, well, no, really not the last day, but the last day at my clinic, I went home, and I really, all day the nurse said to me, and I'm usually up, but he said, "You're very quiet today." And I said, "I'm really meditative today." I said, "I really feel quiet, and I'm thinking, I'm just meditating is what I was doing." And he said, "But I miss your smile." And I said, "Get over it." I said, "I'm not going to have a lot of smiles some days, but I'll give you what I can." And I said, I feel a pain in this catheter that I have on. I said, but it's not in the catheter, it's underneath the catheter. It's like if it were over here, I would think it was my heart, but it's over here, which is, I don't know. But I said, I don't feel good, and that pain is there. And he said, "That's probably healing. The catheter where it was incised and all is healing." And I said, "Well, I accepted that." But then I got the ride home, and I changed into my pajamas and prepared to just really relax for the rest of the day. When I laid down, and I didn't feel good, and then I began to get this big pressure where that was, and it moved on, and I said, "I'm having a heart attack, so I better call, because maybe they can nip it in the bud, because I'm not ready to go right yet." So I called 911, and they came, and they were really, really, good feeling than to have big guys come in. Big guys, I mean, strong big guys come in and say, "Hi," and they've taken me before. So they said, and they asked me all about it, put me on a chair, put me out into the wagon. And they said, "We're going to take you to Portsmouth, because if we take you to Anna Jakes, we'll only have to take you to Portsmouth. We don't want to delay it, so we're going straight to Portsmouth." And I said, I like Portsmouth. That's mm-hmm. where my daughter was when she had a stroke.
Right.
And so they brought me there in a matter of, I mean, it was just minutes. And that was a fantastic group of people there that they put a, the cardiologist put a balloon that would somehow up through the groin and help my heart. They marked my legs where they put could possibly take veins in order to do the surgery. And I mean, I let them do all of that because in the case that I wanted to do it. And then I talked to this cardiologist, and the nurse on duty, Sherry, was ever so helpful, so and straightforward and honest. I love that. I love that in people. I don't like shiftiness and play games and all of that. It was wonderful. And the doctor told me that, and he told my family. That you?
I'll pause it for a moment. And then just, I think I may have jumped ahead a little bit. And we were just talking about, you know, your decision to come
yes.
here. And, you know, we were interrupted. And, you know, do you care to talk about that a little
sure.
bit?
Sure. Yes, right? I would like to.
Okay.
Well, I think we were with the cardiac surgeon telling me
he
he's going to.
You didn't mention that.
Well, I didn't know if I should. I haven't fallen in love with many men in my life. But I tell you, I had a quickening with him.
A quickening. He said, please, this is speeding up my heart too much.
I looked at him, and I thought, oh, he is so nice. He is so nice. He's so smart, and he's contributing. Mm-hmm. That's what I respect. He's contributing, and he's contributing in a way to extend people or help them through. I admire that, so therefore I have high regard for that.
Yeah.
But, he told me that that he would do the heart surgery if I wanted him to. He said, I would do that if that's what you want, but this is what it means. And he went all through that he would have to break my bones in my chest, that he would have to, all these things. And it was really at that time. My head sister had said to me, she's 87, I've said, but she had said to me that whatever I wanted to do would be the right thing. We have strong faith, strong beliefs. And she said, you are the only one that can make this decision. And really what made, I said, if I do this, will the family understand what I'm going to do, because it's like, you know, staying or a little while longer or going. And she says, the family wants you to do what you want to do. We'll always have you in our hearts. So the doctor came in and he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I let you put the balloon up, you know. And he laughed. I said, I let you mark my body all to get ready for this, but now that you've done all of that, I like to say no. And I said, I really, really would like to use the rest of the time that I have, however short or long that is, to see the friends, the many, many, many friends that I have and have a last goodbye with them. Because I don't really want a church thing. I would like to have them all together and raise a glass to me. I would like them to, all of them I know, each have individual thoughts of me, something that happened individually with them. I'd like that. But I don't want to be I just don't want a church service or anything, because I know that wherever I am and where my family is and where my friends are, everything that I need will be there.
So you said, this is what I'm going to do, and so...
I said, this is what I'm going to do. And the first thing I had were calls from all my family saying, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
I'm so very proud of you. I didn't think I'd evoke that. I thought I'd, you know... And they said, we're going to miss you terribly. And I said, I would feel sad. And I think it's sad. I've seen people go. They weren't missed. And I think to be missed is the greatest respect. To be missed, to be loved, to be remembered about certain particular jokes or laugh or a thing in life that we had. And most of my friends, we have a laugh.
I could tell.
We have a laugh. And the nurse that sat with me last night, I was feeling kind of low and lonely and thinking about losing my family. Not losing them, but the separation.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to have another heart attack. And she talked to me and she said, you know, she said, we have a lot of people come through here, but some are more memorable because of the way they look at things. And she says they're inspirational because of the way they adapt to things and the way they accept things. And they effervesce this love and good humor. And I said, oh, I'm so glad. She said, and you're one. You're it this week. And I thought, I'm still working. It's still working. So I hope that I can maintain that, Steve. I want to maintain that after my family. I really don't want my family to come when it's getting very difficult.
You don't want that.
Only if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to, but not the babies.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandchildren, the older ones, are old enough. Yes, if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And my nephew Richard is the matriarch, the stalwart of the family, and you are now. That's who wants to come can come.
I think they want to be here to help you. Pass.
But it's all right if they can't do it. It's all right. Mm-hmm. I have a friend now that's having much trouble with this. She's like a sister to me. She's like a soulmate to me. She's so dear. And she's having a problem with this because she loves me so much. We knit together. We talk together. She doesn't understand lots of the things that where I'm coming from, but she listens. Is there anything nicer in a friend than a listener? Someone who listens. She doesn't want to come, I can tell. She doesn't want to do this. She doesn't understand how I feel that I can do this. She doesn't want me to go before. But I'm praying to God to send her. Because if she doesn't come, there won't be closure for her. I want her to come because I love Sally so, as if she were Ruthie. As if she were Elizabeth. She's part of me. Yeah. And I'm very happy to go and be with my brothers and sisters. my Marilyn that died last year. The husbands of my friends want me to carry a message. I mean, it just doesn't. Every time you think it's over, it's not over. I don't even think that after I'm gone, it's going to be over. I think your life goes on like a river.